Hi, Juliet the Rabbi here, coming to you from New York City. Last week, so I'm late with my recording this week. It was supposed to go out on Friday. Again, I'm having a hard time getting back into the rhythm of the weekly thing because I have a lot more going on in my life right now. Getting all these funerals and weddings. Well, I had my first funeral actually on Friday, and last week was a really busy, crazy, amazing week for me getting ready for this funeral and other things that I'm going to talk about right now that happened. So the funeral, I'm going to talk about it next, this at the end of this week, in a few more days. But preview, a little bit of a, not a preview, but a, you know, like, yeah, that's what I'm, and it was amazing. So not sure exactly what I'm going to write about it yet, but, or talk about it yet. So Mishpatim from last week, from Shabbat, the sapphire, there's this amazing text where God, where the Israelites, well, it's the, really the higher ups, the men, they behold God, and under God's feet, it says in the Torah, there was the likeness of a pavement of sapphire, like the very sky for purity. So I'm going to talk about that text, but let me back up a little bit. Last week, on Monday morning, I had a real panic attack, like for real. I had an appointment to meet with someone I was very nervous about meeting. We were matched up to work on a project together, me as the rabbi and he as the artist. I was supposed to write, I'm going to be writing the drash, the sermon, on the weekly Parsha, like I do here, like I've been doing weekly for, three years, and yeah, I took a little break, but, and he will be making a painting based on my drash. That's the plan. It's a fellowship. It's really cool. Been waiting to start this, and I finally got matched up with someone, and I was like, whoa, how did he become my partner? We have nothing in common, and I was like also talking to myself about it, trying to do some positive self-talk and be like, well, there has to be a reason. Just give him a chance. You don't know. But we come from what feels like completely opposite backgrounds, or that was what it felt like at the moment. He's this fierce Zionist. He moved to Israel at the age of 15, and guess what he's spent his life doing? He's been in counterterrorism his entire life. And I was like, whoa, this is not, like, what can we talk about? What are we going to agree on? And I was scared. One of his children was also at the music festival in Israel when Hamas attacked. So, you know, he's traumatized by his, I mean, I didn't know at the time yet that he was traumatized by his life in counterterrorism. What could I know? I hadn't spoken to him yet. He hadn't said that, but definitely about his son having been at this festival and could have been, he could have died. He could have been captured. He could have been any number of things. And he's fine physically. He's out, but yeah, the trauma was real. And as my listeners may know already, I grew up in a communist, anti-Zionist household. So I was just like, what a time in the midst of such high tensions for us to meet. And you know, it's interesting because I'm taking a class right now, peacemaking, peace building. How do we talk to those who don't come from our, that don't agree with us? And I mean, I know how to listen. I think I know how to do this, but I thought, oh, you know, I need to improve my knowledge of the history, and I've been doing that for months now since the attacks happened and since the war began. But this was like an extra step. Like, maybe there are people in the class that I could meet. Who knows? Like, a lot of reasons to take it. And so, anyway, a lot of high tensions. I mean, last week in that class, people were triggered so much that they couldn't even, they were just, you know, on Zoom, what happens, and people are sending all these texts, they're sending all these chats, right? And they're just saying, oh, just, they're saying to the Israeli, and to the Jewish guy, like, why don't you just name it for what it is? It's apartheid, and it's, you know, and I'm thinking, like, and it's genocide. And I think that the guy, I happen to know him, he used to teach at Hebrew, at, no, not Hebrew College, at Hartford Seminary. And he's been working with Muslims for years, and he's a fierce Zionist, but at the same time, he's really fair. And that was my experience last week listening to him, and people were just like, oh, here's another man talking and mansplaining and whatever, and he's dominating the conversation. And like, he never does. He never dominates the but people are so, so triggered right now. So here I was. Okay, so back to my story. Why had I been matched with this guy? And what if we couldn't find common ground to work together? And that was my fear. And so I literally had a panic attack. Like, I had to go through all this breathing first and put my feet, this is kind of funny, put my feet up on the wall. I was tapping, you know, tapping on my chest and my head and my, all the points, and trying to just calm myself down before I left the house. But I did not cancel. I was brave, and I was going down to meet him. We were going to have pizza together, and we were going to go to his studio in Kips Bay, downtown, like midtown Manhattan, and on the east side. And so here I am on my way finally, and I'm fine. I have recovered, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to meet him. And on my way downtown on the subway, there's this man who comes walking down the aisle with his cane leading the way, and he's obviously begging. And he says, I have a wife and children, I'm almost blind, and this is what happened to me, and if anyone could spare a quarter, a nickel, a dime, some food, anything. And I'm thinking, like, who asks for a quarter, a nickel, a dime anymore? Like, I'm like, what? And I happened to have a dime in my pocket, and I took it out. I was like, okay, he asked for a dime. That's all I have. Anyway, he's coming down the aisle, and there's the pole in between us. And across from me, there's this young man that I had noticed. And he seemed to be a new African immigrant in New York. He was fairly well dressed. He was neat and clean, and he had this kindness in his face. And as the blind man approaches the pole that's separating me from this young man across the aisle, the young guy reaches out to pull him over so he wouldn't hurt himself. Like, he had his cane, but he was hitting the, I mean, I'm sure the guy knew how to navigate it, but like, what I noticed was, here was this person from a very different African, from a very different upbringing, a very different culture, and he saw it as his duty to help this man. Like, you see somebody in need, and you reach out, and you hold onto his arm, and you pull him over. And he didn't worry about how dirty the blind man was. He wasn't afraid to touch him. And I thought, oh, this is not like a New Yorker at all. I mean, he was really showing where he came from. And there was just such kindness in his gesture. And I was surprised, but I think the blind man was also taken aback, because he was kind of like, well, oh, are you giving me money? You know, he puts his hand out, and then he realizes, no, this man is helping him. He doesn't need any help. He would find the pole. He could reach out for it. You know, he has his stick, but still, his cane. And the young African man didn't, we have so many new African immigrants in New York. So many in my neighborhood. They're just so many. And he didn't give him money, but he treated him with such dignity. He saw a human being in need of assistance, and it was just like, this is another human being. It doesn't matter that he's begging, that he's poor. We don't know if he's telling the truth, whatever. Like, it didn't even matter. But what struck me the most was he did it like it was the most natural thing in the world, reaching out with his whole body in a caring way to grasp the man's arm. So now I'm getting back to this week's Parsha, well, last week's Parsha, Mishpatim, laws, meaning laws, and this very curious little paragraph where all the elders of the community ascend the mountain and they see God. And like I said before, under God's feet, it says in the Torah, there was the likeness of a pavement of sapphire, like the very sky of purity. Now, what would you do if you saw something like that? Well, guess what they did? It says they beheld God and they ate and drank. Like, what? They just went back to that's it. They didn't go like, oh, you know, there are other instances in the Torah where people are like trembling, right? But they're not trembling at the sight of God. They just go about their business, eating and drinking. And there's been quite a bit of commentary on this very strange verse. But there's one that seemed most probable for me when I was reading it, that came to me and then I read it, was that God is in the ordinary, if only we stop to notice. Or not. Maybe God is in the ordinary even when we don't notice. Guess what happened when I got downtown and met this artist? I realized how all my worries had been for naught. Nothing to worry about. I couldn't have been more surprised by our encounter. We had an immediate connection. We had so much more in common than I could have ever imagined. Our conversation was natural. We just kept talking. We could have talked for hours. It turns out, like, well, we're like exactly the same age within a few months of each other. We've been married to our spouses over 30 years, both of us, been in long-term marriages. He's an American Israeli. He grew up in Philadelphia. And like, we talked about our kids. We talked about our families. We talked about our spiritual paths. And he went through a very religious phase where he was wearing payas. And he just wanted to try it out and see what it felt like, you know. And he's very, very spiritual. And also kind of, I mean, I guess like me, you know, I guess I, you know, living a secular life, but at the same time religious, just really grounded in Torah. And, oh, we talked about how our families came to the United States and our, you know, ancestry.com search, it, like everything. We just talked about everything. And I loved his artwork. And we ate pizza and we drank Snapple. Well, he did. I didn't have any. I don't drink sugary drinks. Yeah. And then we went to see his artwork and it was exciting. It was just so exciting learning about each other, our families, telling each other about our children and our lives and our paths. And like the man on the subway that I saw, here was another human being in front of me. Just like that African guy looked at this poor beggar in New York who other people would like just ignore because that's what we do, right? Oh, there goes another one. I'm just going to ignore it. But no, he saw him as a human being. And here in front of me was this guy that I'm going to be working with. He was just another human being. And, oh, he had this great idea that we could work on a drash together, work on the sermon together, and both create artwork together, because it turns out I have a background in art as well. And he saw my stuff and he's like, let's do this. Like, let's do it. So who knows if we'll do it, but it's pretty exciting. And so here was this other, just another human being, not the extreme person who I had expected it after all. I mean, and he was traumatized. He talked to me about his trauma and how the artwork helped him and how he spent his life making peace, really. Yes, he has killed. Yes, he's been in horrible situations. I didn't hear about those so much. What I heard about was his effort, how much he hates war. And he became so close to, he loves Arab culture, and he became so close to the Arab villages, the villagers that he worked with, and he helped them make peace. Both, you know, both the settlements that he was working with and the, he didn't want them to fight. It's like, let's stop killing each other. Let's help each other. Let's not do this. Let's find a way of working together. And he, that was the crux of his work. And I was like, well, I hate war too. You know, we're the same. We're the same. And also he had socialist ancestors in his family. And so, like, there was way more in common. And, not, you know, so he wasn't this extreme person that I had expected. So, like when the men beheld God and went to their eating and drinking, maybe I also beheld God last Monday. Maybe I do every day and fail to realize it. Next week, stay tuned. Or this week. Oh, I keep getting it messed up because I keep thinking it's last week. No, this week, stay tuned, because I'm going to talk about, I might, you know, I'm thinking even about that funeral and beholding God. How do we behold God in death? So, until a few days from now, Shavua Tov, have a good week. And, oh right, go to my website, realrabbinyc.com. Check it out. A lot of pages besides my blog. Yeah, I offer all kinds of things, doing all kinds of exciting things these days. So, okay, until soon. Bye.